CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, you sexy bitches. It's time to get your day off to a good start, and that's where we come in. Hopefully. I mean, that's, you know, wake up every morning hoping I can be the good start you need. As opposed to something shit that happens to you first thing in the morning. All right, well, do we have stuff to talk about today? I mean, I say that often, but it's because we always do. We've never, ever had a morning where I get here and go, I think that's it. I think we could wrap this up because really we've run out of the things that need talking about. Okay, before we get into any of that, they really are messing around in the studio this morning. I have no idea what they're doing. I think between the Mash and Dave and Ryan, it's like having the world's three most incompetent people in one room. Here they are. Here's Mash. Ah, good. All right, there he is. And there's Dave Levinson.
Tweedledum and Tweedledummer.
So, Dave, just hold on. Everybody knows Dave Levinson. He's been a part of the Cliff Central family for the longest time. I don't need to introduce you, do I? He is called.
The family I've been in ever.
I know. He's called.
I'm from Springs.
He's called Dave Levinson on Instagram. So, just explain what you've seen those two idiots doing for the last 20 minutes. That's why we're on late.
It's a surprise that you're leaving the studio, that's been packed up.
I would take some of the responsibility. I mean, Mash, I know that you guys are busy packing things up there, so there might not be everything that we need. And we really are. We're getting out of that studio on Thursday, so our last show will be probably Thursday morning. But, Dave, you haven't been there for... No, we're not being...
What the hell?
Mash is young. He doesn't know what forced removals were.
We're not being evicted. We're not being evicted, but that is hilarious. So what were they doing? Because we were meant to start the show at 6 and ended up going on at 10 past.
We could hear you. You couldn't hear us. And I thought, well, isn't that the – you can just talk. No, we're not allowed to speak. You don't give us the chance to speak anyway.
So, Gareth, the 5 minutes before 6 a.m., I was busy saying, Gareth, let's go. Gareth, let's go. Oh, but you're just like doing your own thing. And I'm like, ooh, chair.
I couldn't hear you guys. There was some setting that was wrong. Anyway, it's also embarrassing because it is between you and me and Ryan, it just looked like we didn't know what we were doing. And luckily, it's only Dave in the studio because Dave doesn't know what he's doing.
You get invited to tech conferences.
I know. I got asked to speak at South by Southwest and I can't switch on my microphone. All right, so Dave, while we're talking about this move, so we made the big announcement a few weeks ago that we're moving to new premises, and it's very exciting. You know, we're upgrading Cliff Central, and it's part of our whole new, you know, kind of going to new places, doing new things. Kind of found these pictures which I put up on Instagram and Facebook and everywhere else yesterday about when we moved in. We had a big sign outside saying under construction. We were building that new studio. You were there early on, right? You remember when we started?
Literally came to one of the first ones that you had. There was a comedy kind of podcast thing with Trevor Goombi.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was high tech and fancy and clean and yellow.
Yeah. And we were doing... And at that stage, it looked like a beehive because of the yellow and black. And at that stage, we were doing, it was live satellite as well. So for, I think it was 3 weeks, we did the show live on satellite, which was the first time any show had been done on DSTV on satellite. And it was the first time we'd ever done a podcast. And it was the first time we'd ever done a streaming online radio show. And it was kind of like we were screwing around. We didn't know whether it would work, whether it wouldn't, whether people were watching or they were listening or whatever. I remember we had a million logins on that first day. It was absolutely incredible. A million different people logging in, which
if
was...
If you consider today, if they did that, even with fiber and everything, it would still knock out a server or two.
Dude, it
was satellite.
I promise you, we had so much concern about redundancies and things, but my biggest worry wasn't like we'd have too many people. My worry, like, you know, any comedian's worry is going to be like you'd have too few.
Content.
And no one would know. No, my worry was like no one would come. I was like, no, well, we've got lots to do, but I mean, who's going to come? And luckily, you know, people came. So here we
are.
I was one of the million.
I was there. I mean, I think I might have even gone to someone's house because I wasn't rich enough to afford DSTV at that point.
Hey, Bo.
So I think I do remember tuning and getting in. And then at that stage, it was Balls Radio. Do you remember? They also tried to do a visual radio with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
that
they
whole
did.
Concept was ahead of its time. And then like everything, it's like Betamax VHS. Something happens. And then the one works and the other one doesn't.
Well, I'm glad you were there from the beginning. And the reason I bring all of this up with you here this morning is because in the production room, which I think is directly behind Dave in this picture, there's a little framed picture of – just see if you can find it. Like that little – it's got a white frame around it. I think it's on the – and you are one of a set of balls of a show that you made. And that what did you call the show?
It was the Just Now Comedy Podcast.
Oh, Dave, that's you, one of those balls.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
We were the tripod that kept the show together.
Wow.
I think we missed a trick with that show because now every man and his dog's got a podcast. And we took it for granted that we'll always have it. And that's one of the things in life. Like nothing is ever permanent, even you moving now. Hmm. So we didn't really take advantage of it.
But you did a good job. I mean, for how long? You guys did that show for what, 2-3 years?
I'd say we did a good job purely because we just arrived on time and then we'd sit outside here on the couch and say, what are we talking about today? And I'm like, I don't know.
It was...
We filled it. It was an hour. It was lovely.
It was kind of ahead of its time. Now every comedian is doing a show and all of them are kind of on the same basis that you did your show. And I mean, you know, you mentioned Trevor Gumby. That was really breakthrough stuff as well. There we go. There's the... Just show them that picture. So there's a big cock. There's a big cock. And then there's... You. Who's the other dude?
It's not that big. It's actually to scale. It's actually a tracing of mine.
Who's the other guy?
Eric Janssen.
Eric, of course.
Yeah, Just Now Comedy Podcast. So that would be essentially that would have been the guests, and then we were the hosts.
Oh, okay.
You know what this reminds me of? This move that you're doing. You know that bumper sticker in the 80s that said, well, the last person to leave the country, please put off the lights.
Yeah, I remember that.
How redundant is that bumper sticker? Like you don't have to switch off the lights now. And if you're leaving the country, the reason why you're leaving the country is because the lights don't fucking work.
Yeah, absolutely. It says that Dave and Mash are soft. I must turn them up. Are the levels okay there, Mash?
The levels are good this side.
All right. Signet says, I remember watching the live show on Comedy Central and I got a fright when I saw Damon Calvari for the first time. Don't worry.
So most people do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Moonchild
Maybe
says
I'll I used to talk closer.
I used to enjoy Dave's podcast. Very amusing. Very, very amusing.
The weird thing is, as it went, we started doing those radio things where we had that little clock that they teach you at radio school. We would actually put timing in. We got guests in. We actually started becoming quite organized, but that took away the zaniness of it. I preferred the craziness when we'd have guests in that didn't know what they were talking about. It was just a mess.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't just bring in other comedians. You had very weird people on there. All of our shows had very weird. I remember my show used to have completely like we still do. We still get these bizarre people on from time to time.
As a comedian, whenever you're on a radio, TV show or something, you try and do something memorable or try and, you know, have you ever interviewed Mark Banks?
Oh, he's chaos. Amazing.
Chaos. No, but it adds value.
He cannot focus. Mash, Mark Banks is probably one of South Africa's most famous comedians, just in case you don't know, or someone in the audience that doesn't know.
Poster boy for adult ADHD.
This guy, when he gets in, when he gets into the show and he gets onto the live broadcast, he takes it in 300 different directions. What you have to do with Mark Banks is just leave him alone. Let him wax about all kinds of nonsense. And he will make people laugh. You don't have to try and control him. He's not the kind of guy who, when you interview him, you have to have a set of questions or prepare things in your head or try to get into his head. It's not going to happen.
And there's also, you think he's drowning. So you think you're going to throw in a question with him. And he's not drowning. He's fully in control of the chaos.
He's a nutcase. Total nutcase. So Dave,
those are fun times.
How are you? What's been happening with you?
Well, I'm looking at you moving. It's quite interesting because I've moved about 4 times the last few months, mostly probably because I got evicted.
Yeah, I was going to say that. because you actually were evicted. Yeah.
I thought I was a nice guy. Then when you read the letter from the landlord, you're like, jeepers. That's it's kind of makes you wake up about perception of what people think about you. Mm. So you can walk into the room and think, I'm looking good. I'm the man. And then ask 10 people's opinion of you. I'm like, jeepers, I'm an absolute fucking idiot.
Yeah.
So I had a friend of mine sleeping on my couch, and she charged me 300 rand a night for my friend sleeping on the couch. And he's just a guy who needed an interview in Joburg, and he came and stayed at my place. 300 rand a night on the couch.
Your landlord charged you for having someone in your place that you're already paying for. That's insane. Where was this?
I spoke to in Kailami. But then I spoke to Andrew and I said, 300 rand a night, you slept on my couch. I should have fucked him.
Wait, let's take several steps back. Let's start from the top.
No, let's not.
So,
let's not.
In terms of the landlord, what was this? What was the living arrangement?
Just a cottage in Kailami. But anyway, that's now the only thing. I found a new place and a new life. But the thing is, as you said, how are you doing? I've got my son living with me now. So he's moved from Cape Town to Joburg. So that's kind of put a Bunsen burner up my ass. I'm working much harder at the home selling thing than I am at the comedy thing. But I can't stop being funny. It's not like it's just you switch it off. But yet being funny and selling homes is actually quite cool as well.
Are you an estate agent?
I work at Remax. No, I qualify in about a couple of months' time.
Oh, lovely.
As an actual agent.
I would like an estate agent who has a sense of humor. Most of them are dreary, dull people, and they just lie. At least with you, you're going to get some comedy thrown in, you know?
No, you do. It's not always going to be a plus. I mean, most of them people phone the boss and go, that one agent of yours, is he okay?
Some of them, you think they're on crack or something, because they'll be smiling, showing you the ugliest bathroom on earth. With the biggest smile, like, oh, this one has a flushing toilet. And it's like, okay.
Everyone's got to, I don't even go into the house. I'm not going to tell someone what a toilet is.
Yeah, you just said,
When they come out, I'm like, what do you think? And they go, I'm like, oh, let's go next one. But I'm not saying I've sold a trillion houses because as you can see, I'm still doing comedy. So I've still got my comedy nights that I do and I've still got my things, but it's the old thing. Keep different streams of income. You're not going to make it in this world if you haven't got a couple of streams.
But you apparently you're also doing singing now.
We still myself and Keenan Arison, I don't know if you know him, he's an actor, great actor as well.
We were
taking some electric plants one night at Kurt Schoonard's house, and we had this karaoke machine there, and we started singing, and Kurt was sitting there, and after about an hour of singing the songs, he goes, guys, this is better than most corporate events that I've been to, because I was talking shit and being funny and Keenan was singing the song. He said, this is a show here. So we started thinking about it about 12 years later. We eventually came up with a thing called the Vegas Nights, which is like that old crooner style Sammy Davis and Dean Martin kind of chats in between the songs. I don't know if you remember them. Most of the people go and watch them for the chats.
But again, I love that idea. And I mean, you've obviously got a good singing voice as well. So I think it
surprised me and the people because I don't really do a lot of the singing. So the voices that I can do are almost impersonations rather than singing. So you don't have to sing. Yeah.
Dude, how many serious singers in inverted commas do we know who are exactly like that? They're actually doing an impersonation.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's fun to dress up like Frank Sinatra, dress up like Elvis, do things, and then do a mashup of different things. Do ABBA in an Elvis voice. So it's just fun.
Hasn't Tony Bennett pretty much made an entire life out of just doing an impersonation of Frank Sinatra? I mean, that's kind of how it's worked for Tony Bennett, right? I know I'm going to piss people off, but I think that's...
It's amazing how these days you can say something like about the government or racist or economics, but the most complaints you get is if you say, like, Taylor Swift sucks. Then you get...
Yeah, how deep.
Then you get the comment section blowing up. So Tony Bennett, yeah, but Tony, is he still alive?
So listen, I want you to just remind people, because it's one of my favorite things while we're reminiscing and being nostalgic in the old studio for the last few days. Those Friday mornings that you used to be there for, you remember Fridays it would be my show. Then my show would end. Then it would be the sex show, wasn't it?
ours was the sex show. We were the warm-up for the sex show.
Yeah, you were there first. Then there was the sex show. Then there was Casper De Vries. And after Casper, there was O'Neill, wasn't it? Yeah. And basically, on a Friday morning, you could sit there and you would see everything that was hilarious and funny and ridiculous and insane between 8 o'clock in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. It would just be absolute madness. Every Friday would be, there'd be wild animals. There was once a cheetah that was brought in on a leash, followed by two pole dancers who went completely naked. Then there was, the sex show, which was,
I guess the pole dancers were before the sex show.
The sex show where they had a woman squirt in studio while John T had like half his arm up her. Then there was,
you know, it was weird. We weren't allowed to drink beer in the studio, and I came to you and said, "Gareth, can I talk to you about the non-drinking of the beer in our studio? This lady's gonna have some vaginal juices on your very expensive Technics equipment." I suppose it's just relative.
I hope
it wasn't one of John's relatives.
You know, can I tell you what? I'm more proud of that stuff than I am of any of the like pioneering, you know, broadcasting bullshit that people throw around all the time. That, like, if I think about those insane days with Trevor Gumby and Casper and you guys, and that makes me happy. Genuinely gives me.
You know what was nice is that there was a serendipitousness about it. Is that a word? That there wasn't a planned thing. So you could see Rena was like looking at it side eye because she came from a real part of radio.
Mm.
And then you were like, just let it go. Let's see how, give them enough rope to hang themselves. And that's what's missing now. When you watch Joe Rogan, when he first started, there was this crazy wildness where it was the guy would come in and David Icke or whoever it was. Now it's quite planned and you need to have a booking and you need to know what you're doing and it's all very thing. So you kind of miss that circusness of it.
Well, I mean, for him, you know, he's cashed in now, which is only right. He's been building this thing for, I think he started what, 5 or 6 years before we started. So he's been going at it a while. And I'll tell you what, there comes a point where you go, all right, if there isn't a payday somewhere around this corner, I don't know if I want to keep on doing this, you know? So I get it. Yeah, tipping point. I get it from him. But there are other people who are picking up the slack, and there are plenty of good podcasts around these days. You haven't been tempted to start your own?
That's when I came in here, I looked at it and I thought, shit, did I miss on the carousel on the boat? And yet if it's not your thing, it's not your thing. So to start it up, technically you've got to be 100%. Mm. If you've got the content, that's cool. So in a way, I'm a little bit sad that I haven't started my own podcast, but then there's plenty of others to be on. So I'd rather just carry on doing the other stuff. If it's not in you, it's not in you. I couldn't set it up myself.
Well, the hardest part of any TV, radio, podcast show is that you have to do it consistently. You have to be there every day or at least once a week, at least.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure you do it. You miss one show in terms of if you have a weekly show and all people are waiting for is that once a week update and you don't That's give it to them.
Even if you started a little bit late this morning, you might have lost 3 or 4 people going, "Oh fuck, he's not there."
Yeah.
So I haven't started my own podcast, and I saw Scott Bezadno's got a new one on now. Not a new idea, but he's talking to comedians and famous people's mothers, just because that's where the truth lies. So it's called Every Man and His Mom or something. Every podcast.
Yeah,
so
he invited me onto that, and I'm like,
it's sponsored already. Before he's even started. So he's already on that level of that. Whereas if I was in my lounge doing a podcast, I don't know. I'm not. I'm having fun doing the state agent stuff, and I'm loving the singing. It's actually changed the whole thing. It takes so much pressure off you when you don't have to do a joke because the song's already written.
Yeah.
So I can do the jokes in between.
There are lots of people here talking about that, the sex show, and we should really get Jonty back on. Ryan, you should take note of that. We must
maybe
get
a retrospective of all the people that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should do like
Is Tony Bennett alive?
Tony Bennett.
Did he not die recently?
I think he's still alive.
Yeah.
Do you remember Tony Factor?
No. Who was Tony Factor? Remind me.
He owned a chain of furniture shops back in the 80s. And he used to do radio ads. And this was his voice. So he said, "Come down to Tony Factor's tomorrow. We've got some couches and some lovely wall units. Only R17.80. Pay it off over 6 months."
That was Tony Factor.
Isn't there also that guy who does the...
How would you do radio voices that was your...
Hang on. There was a guy, because we did go through a stage in advertising where
the owner...
The owner had to do the ad, right?
Yeah, and they called him Chubby Checker, and he was the MD of Checkers. He also did his own ads.
Clive Wheel was his name.
He had a good idea, though. He was one of those guys. Why hire an ad agency when you can? But I can do this. I just walk through the. Where's the camera? I mean, yeah, all right, let's go.
It's my shop. I mean, yeah.
Okay, I mean, we remember.
Good idea, though. Chubby Checker, they called him.
We remember them. So, you know.
It's the same as Hirschler's with Lucy. Lucy's the owner of the company.
Correct.
You do you do your own voiceovers, don't you? You're pretty good.
Wasn't there's also one other dude who does like, I haven't heard him in years, but I think he owns some kind of linen company. So like good linen.
Volpes.
I don't know what it is. Anyway, he also, ha, a few words you bar from linen, not from me.
How are you doing, Gareth? What are you doing?
I'm all right.
I had a good conversation about you the other day with Kurt Skinrod, and he gave you a compliment in terms of what you do. We do so many radio interviews where all of a sudden we'll arrive there. That radio DJ decides to launch his comedy career the day that you're there. Oh, so instead of asking you questions about what gigs you've got coming up, how much the gig is, where is it? They decide they're going to be funny now. Then you're like, okay, well, I'll just sit back. And with you, you at least pass the ball and you go research wise, you know what you're saying. And then the comedian can be funny and do their shit. So maybe it's in your nature, but maybe you've also learned how to do it over the years.
I think the most important thing about having a show like this and getting people on is letting them have their say. Otherwise, why bother having them? You know, I mean, there are people who do their own show where it's just them. They don't have a guest. They sit there for half an hour, and they will do news. They'll do commentary. They'll do all that stuff. I think it's amazing. And there are some tremendously talented people who could do that. I just don't find it as entertaining as conversation. There has to be a bit of turn. What do you think?
Argument with a friend of mine about Prince.
For a while.
Nash, talk to us.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do a show on your own. That sounds kind of boring to me. You need a bit of spice. You need something different apart from yourself. But Dave, I like many of the audience haven't been following your career quite as closely. So I'd just like to find out, how many years have you been in comedy for?
It's about 22.
Oh, as old as me, basically. When I was a sperm cell in that a bull sack.
1999
as well.
99.
Wow. Yeah. That is impressive.
So here's the thing, Nash, if that's your real name. if you want to be good at something, all you have to do is just keep doing it. And eventually the other people either die or stop doing it. So you'll actually become, so someone said, you must be in one of the top 20 comedians in the country. And I'm like, how's that? Who even works that out? There's not like there's a radio show that you've slipped down three places because you weren't funny on Wednesday. But eventually you'll be one of the comedians that you have to be. Mark Lottring, Kurt Skinner, Dave Levinson, Mel Miller still alive.
Yeah.
And yet there's a whole bunch of new guys coming through that are in the top 400. We don't have anywhere to perform, but that's maybe why you haven't seen it, because where are the comedy clubs? Mash.
Yeah.
Is there still nothing going on in the world of comedy clubs? Because
there's small restaurants and little places. So even last night there was a gig, there were a couple of gigs, but they're in Melville, and I just don't feel like going to Melville and getting mugged. Okay. But it was there's small little clubs where it's like almost like back in the 90s where we started.
Mugged? You'd be lucky to not get raped.
Speaking of getting mugged, I actually saw an article last night. Last night I was just up and about, and I got home a bit later, I must confess, but I came across this article at about 11 p.m. and I'm going to read it to you quickly. It is ridiculous. So the headline says, three men on the run after police commander hijacked and robbed. And this absolutely blew my mind, because I thought to myself, how are we supposed to feel safe when the freaking police commanders are getting robbed right now? How are we supposed to feel safe?
No, you're not. you're not saying, listen, it's always, this is a funny thing that people don't seem to understand. Human civilization, like the fact that things work and they don't, is on such a knife's edge the whole time. Everybody thinks, well, there's this huge buffer zone between like people falling into complete anarchy and chaos on one hand and order and like a civilized society on the other. It's actually like paper thin. You could see it with ESCOM, for example. When it's working, you take it for granted. It's all good. There are people who know what they're doing, engineers. It's being managed properly. Someone's doing the finances. They're charging the right amount for the electricity. plant is being maintained, all that stuff. And then little things start to go wrong and boom, suddenly you've got no power. And then it's a big fuck up. And it's the same for everything. Law and order, same for justice. It's the same for, you know, water. It's the same for people going to vote. It's everything in society. It all just is on a very, very thin edge. And the difference between like Afghanistan and what's one of the most rule-bound, orderly, probably like an Australia or New Zealand.
Scandinavian country.
Or Scandinavia. Good example. The difference between a Norway and an Afghanistan is like actually not as big as you would think it was. It's not that big a difference. If there are a few people in society who are holding things together, it can be in Norway. If they're not enough or there are bad ones, it can be in Afghanistan. It's that simple. And Mash, it's not surprising in a country like ours that like even the police are looked at as targets these days because people are hungry, man. And where else are they going to get money? They look around, they're like, that policeman has a hot lunch. I think I'll help myself to some of that.
Do you know where those societies work best? And it's so sad and scary is when the policing is done by the humans. We saw it with COVID when people shouted, you're not wearing a mask or if you went running. In Australia, as a South African, have you ever crossed the road when there's no cars? And you're like, well, I'm going to go. And the people who frown at you, you don't cross the road, man. Don't do it. Walking. So that policeman is the same as that story when you see it says ex-athlete or ex-Springbok athlete shoots rhino. So you don't realize that he's not going to be a Springbok athlete for the rest of his life. He's going to be a human at some point.
Yeah.
So that man, whoever he's a police commander, he's got this humanness to him where he's just lost it. He's gone off the rails. But that's as a human being. I bet you he's pretty good at his job as a commander. Just every now and then he steals a car and some stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be, it's just a little blip on his CV where he's like, tomorrow morning he comes through and goes, my bad.
Absolutely. Here's Congo Chris saying the veneer of society is much thinner than we'd like to admit. And he uses the example of the KZN and Fees Must Fall riots. And that's exactly right. It can all fall apart very, very quickly.
So it's a broken window syndrome. Have you ever read that book?
Yeah. Yes,
in Chicago, those buildings with the windows, where if one window was broken within three months, you walk past, we're like, I'm going to throw a stone in one of those.
It was New York. It was New York and it was Rudy Giuliani.
The docs, okay.
Yeah, and he was the one who said, he became mayor of New York, and he said, if you tolerate broken windows on a public street and you tolerate people breaking those windows and you don't fix them immediately, everything around them starts to disintegrate, which is why often I'll go on about like litter on the side of the road.
That's where it starts.
Because to me, you cannot be a society that expects people to be treated with human dignity when the people in the society don't even have the dignity to clean up in their immediate environment. Like just in the space that they, just where you are, you know, like if your office is dirty, if your bedroom is dirty, if your yard is dirty, then you can't expect like government to fix your problems because you can't even solve the little space around.
If you've never offered $100 to a traffic cop, then you can't stand up in the public forum and go, I believe corruption. I'm like, but you don't.
All right. Well, let's not get into all the heavy stuff all at once.
My friend was mugged last night. So that's why it's weird to talk about it because I really love the guy. And it's just on the beach in Table View, you know.
What?
So it's horrible. Yeah, Mark Vessels, great photographer, had his phone stolen, but it also was beaten up. So it's not, I understand sometimes you go, hey, take my stuff. I can get it insured, whatever. But in front of his family, so now at least they're looking for the guy. But I mean, it's just, this is a walk on the beach on Sunset Beach. At 7:30 in Cape Town, still light.
Dude, that's and it's horrible.
Just, that was now. So I just said to him, like, be strong and keep going. Because event, you know, if you speak to someone after they've been mugged or something, they talk about the country in a whole different way.
Yeah, that's true.
You start bringing up all kinds of things like, nah, well, this and that. And that. But he's just such a mellow, like, calm, humility dude. He's not even talking about he didn't mention any color of anyone or anything that did it to him. He just said it was just a horrible experience.
I'm thoroughly shocked because I also didn't want to go home for a couple of years to my family in Klerksdorp because somebody tried to break into my car outside the police station. And after that experience, I just didn't go home the whole year. My family's like, you just can't avoid us forever.
Talk about the ADT guards outside the police station in Mitchell's Plain. That the police station's guarded.
Yeah.
By by Fidelity cars.
I mean, there's no escaping it. We're just surrounded now. You know, the police, the everybody is a victim. We're all just victims.
Do you follow the good news guys on the other side of the spectrum?
Yes.
Where they try and look for good news and stuff. And it's amazing that they're doing so well finding the good things.
Mm.
Because we can talk about these things.
Let's just talk about that for a second, because I was talking to a friend of mine and he said to me, that's bullshit. Like, you know how, and I've often tried it and we do get it right some of the time, I think. But you know, everybody says, oh, I'm tired of all the bad news. I would love to listen to something where people just give me something inspiring. And the funny thing is, like, people say that, but when you do the good news stuff, those people never listen. Your ratings don't go up and people don't send you emails saying, oh, thanks for doing all that good news stuff. Yeah. No one has ever emailed the show and said, oh, you know, that show that you did, especially for all of us who love positive news the other day, we loved it. There's never an ounce of feedback from those people.
So you know where that comes from. That's your caveman brain.
Yeah.
Because you can't survive in the cave. If I come to the cave and I say, geez, I smelled the most beautiful flower. And you come to the cave and say, I just saw a saber-toothed tiger. You're like, okay, my survival instincts are kicking in. I become stronger. Right. I go one level up.
Yeah.
You go smell the flower and you get killed by the saber-toothed tiger. I needed that news. I love the flower.
And you know what you remember? You don't remember the flower story at all. You remember the saber-toothed tiger. It's the only thing on your mind.
I have to survive.
So people can't, you know, when people say to me, you know, and I mean, we try to give a fair balance of good and bad because there's equal amounts of good and bad in the world, and it depends on what you look for. You know, we speak to Dr. Hanan Bushkin every Monday, and he tells us it's the coin theory. What are you concentrating on? What are you spending your time and your effort on? And if you're focused on the negative stuff the whole time, it will pull you down. The reality is when people say, oh, no, we only focus on the positive news, all that happens is those people who love the positive stuff or say they love the positive stuff, they pretend to be there for a short while, and then they disappear. And then the bad news.
Have you got those friends who don't watch the news? They kind of go, I don't watch the news. So when I go on stage, they go, what comedy do you do? So I'm thinking like, should I talk about all these things? So I hate talking about the pandemic. I don't talk about load shedding. I don't talk about things that I'll talk about the subtleness underneath that, where I'm getting caught for my license disc not being up to date. But there's a guy on a small little piece of wood skateboard with 17 tons of recycling just skating past me.
Yeah.
On my road.
Right.
Sensibly, my road, because I paid for William Nicol. Because in the 70s, I obviously put some tax money aside for William Nicol. But the contrast then, I'd rather do that, to say to the cop, well, where's his license disc? Because his vehicle's bigger than mine. Yeah. And he's wheels, correct. And he's braking with his foot.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I like to do that rather than to talk about the government. And then because people go, do you talk about Jacob Zuma on stage? I'm like, why? No. Oh. So that's the coin thing. I'd rather not concentrate on that stuff. So maybe my job as a comedian is to make you laugh and go, well, that's interesting. I didn't see it that way, or the slanted view of everything, because I can't. It gets you down immediately. Talk about that shit.
Yeah. And you know, Dave, one thing about South Africans in particular is we love gossip. We love indabazabantu. Oh, yeah. We love people's business. We all up in everybody's business. And we like pretending, saying, oh, can we just have some positivity for once in a while? But once the positivity comes, we don't even retweet it. We don't retweet it. We don't share it.
Give me an example of something that happened. Something good. Go. It's your turn. You got the stick. You've got the talking stick.
Okay, something good that happened. The KFC couple was the last good thing. I remember it was like 3 years ago.
Oh my God. That was the only positive thing that Twitter's ever done.
Ever in this country. Apart from that, we're just gossiping, sharing people's nudes, exposing who cheated on who with who.
I haven't been BBLs on Twitter for 2 years. I don't know anything about this.
It's become wild. It's the wild west up in there, Dave.
But as a comedian, I didn't do the Twitter anymore because you know me well enough to know that everything I say has got a tinge of irony or just hasn't a sarcasm. I'm not interested in the story. I don't even know. So I'll comment on it. But the way that I speak, I'll be like, oh boy, here we go. But what you read is like, oh boy, here we go. Just
yes.
An old man. It's an old man sigh. I'm just go like, if I can't type it, it's this noise. So as an older person, when someone's talking and you go, I've seen this shit before, it's just disguised. And you make that noise, you go, so I can't type that. I can't type that because that's what I want to type on Twitter all the time. And I just see it and I go, oh, is Archie there, Bunker. Do you remember him? It was a TV show where he would get up out of his seat.
Is there not an emoticon that we can use or an emoji or something that we can use for that? That noise?
I also want something on Facebook that goes, yeah, kind of, I'm okay with that. I don't want to like it. I'm not fully 100%. I just want a button that goes, yeah, I don't really like you, but I'll be friends with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a dislike now on Twitter. So you can.
But that's too much because I've disliked many people. And then 10 years later, they've stopped and helped me change a tire.
Huh. You gotta be so careful. Like, also, you don't need to have an opinion on everything, right?
So here's the problem. A fact won't get you the likes, but an opinion will get you 20 million. Mm-hmm. And that was my issue with Twitter, where you'd say the thing and be like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Well, this is the funny thing about people, right? There could be a guy who's currently working on a cure for cancer, and maybe he even finds the cure for cancer, and he'll get about 10 minutes of curiosity and interest across the internet for, you know, maybe a day or two. And then people will accept that the cure for cancer is the standard. And that's, we should all have that. This guy will disappear off, and there'll be some loudmouth with a political opinion who, I don't know, supports or doesn't support Donald Trump or cares or doesn't care about.
You get the eyeballs.
He'll get the eyeballs, not the cancer cure guy. The cancer cure guy should be the only person we talk to for a year. But you know what people are like? They'll go to like trust.
If that cancer cure comes in the form of a vaccine, that guy's fucked already.
That is true. I saw there was something trending, kind of good actually, on Twitter. Okay. About 2 days ago. There was I don't know if this is fake news or not. Can the audience please help me Snopes this? But because it is from Twitter, so you never know. But there was a rock found in Congo that basically just produces power, and they just
saw that. I don't know if it's true though. It looks like it could be bullshit.
It sounds a bit fake newsy, so please Snopes that, audience, and let's see.
There's a rock that makes power.
What are you doing there, Dave? Are you taking a selfie?
I remind myself of Dan Nickel, who spends about 20 minutes before every show just doing socials, and then it's done. He gets it out of the way, and then he can be normal. Whereas when you're talking to someone normally, and they go, just wait, I just have to film for Instagram. You're like, fuck you, I was talking to you, man.
Yeah. No. It's my least favorite interruption is when you're actually having a good time with a bunch of people and then someone will go, let's take a picture.
No, let's do it. And then the cameras and let's do a boomerang.
Or like, don't eat. Don't touch that food yet. I have to take pictures. Don't touch that drink. I have to take pictures first.
But seriously, is there this new rock they've discovered in the Congo that Lebanc says is vibranium?
Is that from Wakanda?
It is from Wakanda.
I think we are so hungry for anything that can give us electricity at the moment that we would love to believe that there's a rock that can generate.
Mesopotamians had those jars. Remember, they found them and there was some oil in some of them. And the guy drew a line across the top and he said, these are in series and that's a light bulb. You're like, go. Oh,
holy shit.
The Mesopotamian Electric Company was typed on the bottom of the vase. That's how they knew. Are you an archaeologist? No, it's on the bottom of the thing, mate.
All right. I don't want to depress anybody, but we've got to look at a couple of news stories. Do you mind if we quickly do that? Just to give us an idea of what's going on in the world, you know, so we're paying a little bit of attention. So first things first, Cyril Ramaphosa says, I hate starting with him every day, but here we go. He says that the red tape that they have around things has hampered Eskom's maintenance and the supply of additional megawatts from other sources. Why would we have red tape, Cyril? Is it because your party keeps stealing everything that isn't taped down?
Can I tell you what's keeping Eskom together? It probably is red duct tape on some of the valves.
Problem.
It's just keeping it all together there.
He says, when we are supposed to do things, there is regulation, law, and processes. Who puts regulation, law, and processes in place, Cyril?
That guy.
Politicians. That's who. Who's the legislature, the parliament? Their whole job is to create regulation, law, and processes. So this is like someone looking in the mirror and going, you have got to stop your shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's you.
If you have a sign outside your house that says, beware the dog, and then the dog bites you inside the house. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. That's what's going on. All right. So we're not going to go into too much detail on that one, but it's just another stupidity from the people who are supposed to be our leaders. The Japanese prime minister has warned that their country is on the brink of falling over in terms of their birth rate. Apparently, the prime minister said it's a case of now or never. The population's 125 million. It's estimated that fewer than 800,000 births occurred last year. In the 1970s, that figure was more than 2 million. Birth rates are slowing in many countries, including Japan's neighbors. The issue is particularly acute in Japan as life expectancy has risen in recent decades. So people are living for longer, but they're having no children, and these old people need to be paid for. You know, these older people need to be looked after by a social system.
I'm agreeing with that.
Right? Okay. I mean,
who is the Prime Minister of Japan?
His name.
Who is the Prime Minister of Japan?
That's not his name, is it?
No, but my son and I do that for hours. He'll go, who? Who? And then if he's woke, then it'll be they is the Prime Minister of Japan.
So it's Kishida is the Prime Minister of Japan. Kishida. The
birth rates are actually a massive thing because now they've got this new idea of these birth pods where you can grow up to 30,000 embryos through birth.
Well, really?
They reckon they're going to have to do because then that group, they'll work it out with all these actuarial people. Go, how many births do we need this year to maintain 80-90-year-olds next year? So they'll do in the 40 years. So they'll do these births now. They'll control the births. We need 30,000 babies today.
Oh, so we need 30,000 babies today to maintain the production of Samsung phones.
who's going to raise? It's not just creating the lives.
That's where the massive thing is. You can't have a big 30,000 pod thing like the Matrix. No. Who raises those kids?
It's not just organic beings. We don't need more people who are just alive. We need people who are actually raised properly by parents who give a shit about them. So apparently, Japan is on the verge of whether or not they could continue to function as a society. He says that he eventually wants the government to double its spending on child-related programs. But what they need to do is actually persuade Japanese people to have more sex and to raise kids and to get married and to, you know, do the stuff that makes a population.
When you say child programs, you mean like Takalani and...
Well, that's what you think, right? It's so ridiculous.
But you know, Gareth...
There should be a campaign. Are you Japanese? Have sex tonight.
There was something similar to that. They actually, I don't know if this is fake news, but I remember seeing this on Twitter. I take everything I see on Twitter with a grain of salt, but they actually launched some pods in Japan on the side of the road where you can just go in, go for a quick cloof quickly and come out. They were actually encouraging young people to have more sex.
But most people were just using the pod for a wank.
Pretty much.
Probably that's what guys would do, right?
Weird is a historical fact. What causes population growth? Mm-hmm. It's weirdly enough is war. So, although you'd think that people would die, what happens is 18-year-olds go to war. So 18, 19, 20s. Those are the fighting age. The ones that stay behind and the other ones that come to fight that war are 18 and 19 as well. And they're just raping and pillaging and doing everything. So your birth rates go up after the war.
Yeah,
because that's the biggest problem in Ukraine and Russia as well, where people they kind of assume that rape is also part of the war. It's the biggest weapon, in fact.
Well, there's also an evolutionary reason why humans kick into breeding mode when there's a war is because they realize that their population's under threat. You see, when we get too comfortable, as has happened in parts of the world, there are certain countries where people live fairly comfortably. They've also become single because they don't see the need to complicate their lives with kids or whatever else. So they're living a soft life. And until your life gets hard, you don't feel like you need to worry about the next generation because your generation's fine. And you're like, oh, well, I don't have kids. So there's an evolutionary reason why when there's war, it jerks the whole society into like, oh my God, we better make more people. And we better ensure our survival.
So Japan's on the brink of possible war then to get their population up. So you just need America to find oil there and they're fucking back in the game.
Well, listen, I mean, Japan's constantly under threat. North Korea always pointing their missiles at them. There's that fight over, you know, certain islands in the North China Sea, which the Chinese and the Japanese have been at each other's throats for the longest time. In fact, I think probably the last 40 or so years have been the only fairly sustained period of peace, even though they're still not particularly great friends, between Japan and China for hundreds, if not thousands of years. So yeah, apparently, so what they're doing is, and the other problem in Japan, by the way, is that they don't allow you to emigrate there. They are not interested in immigration at all. If you want to move to Japan, you got no chance. Unless you marry someone Japanese, even then, they might not give you citizenship. You can't apply. Like if you apply to move to Japan, it's the only country that just says, I'm sorry, no. You're not born here. We're not having you. Sorry.
No, thank you.
No, I don't care. And everybody always goes, oh, it's so unfair what America, they won't let all those Mexicans in who are desperate to get in. Or South Africa with all your Zimbabweans, you guys are really horrible to them. Meanwhile, Japan is like, sorry, we're not having
any. Is
Yoko Ono Japanese?
Yeah, she is.
So they're okay with exporting then?
Oh, yeah.
And you know, another thing that's much more different nowadays is the fact that back then, talking to old people, I talk to a lot of old people all the time, and talking to some of them.
We want to talk to you, but we want to actually ask you about that.
Talking to Dave Levinson right now.
And a lot of them tell me that a lot of them have well, they haven't told me this, but I've concluded basically the same thing for all of them. And that is, in their generation, having lots of kids, having lots of grandkids was a way to, how can I put this? Sort yourself out in your older years. Know that you'll be taken care of. They always kept that in mind. Nowadays, we are so well educated and we have access to all this information that I'm like, I'm going to get a unit trust together, an annuity fund. I'm going to do this. I'm going to take care of myself. I'm working to take care of myself when I'm older. I don't need no kids taking care of me. So because of the access to information nowadays, we also don't feel that pressure to have lots of kids, to have lots of grandkids, just for the sake of being taken care of. Lots of Black people can tell you this. Black tax is a thing, Gareth.
Yeah,
Black tax is a thing. We raised you. You owe us now.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that many Black people, I myself, actually, my parents are like, Bon, I know you want nothing from me, but I know low-key they're like, Bon, give us some money. And I know it is coming. It is coming. The day is coming. I'll show up in a blue Beamer one of these days and they'll be like, you don't give us money, but you know, it's coming. So that is another big reason why a lot of people were having lots of kids back in the day. We're educated now, y'all. Let's go open some unit trusts. Well, let's go invest. Let's invest tech wherever. Let's go sort ourselves out.
That's so true. And Dave, you'll remember this too. Do you remember when people were talking about the population explosion and what are we going to do when Earth is full? And here we are, and we're talking about a population crisis rather than a population overload. And all those people who said, oh, well, there are too many people on the planet and we'll all be dying of starvation because there won't be enough food. Well, that's clearly bullshit, right?
So then there's your veneer. Take that veneer on everything that you hear. It's got to just come from somewhere that's teaching nothing. So that includes the power issue. That includes everything that you hear. You've got to go, hang on, where's it coming from? Is there a shortage of power and oil?
And do we have, and don't believe all this nonsense about, you know, that human beings won't figure some way out. The climate change thing, then, you know, the only way we're going to solve anything to do with climate change is some clever guy or some clever girl or some clever group of people are going to get together and figure out the easiest way to take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere or to cool the earth down by a degree or warm it up by a degree or whatever we need. And we will get that clever. We will figure that out. Just like we figured out with fertilizer, we could grow more food. We could have more people on earth. And that it is sustainable. It's totally sustainable. I mean, here's the whole point being made for me in a much more eloquent fashion by Congo Chris, who says population collapses are the next big crisis, not climate change. It's happening in Russia, China, the USA, slowly happening all over the world as people delay or disregard having a child. Boom. Spot on. So
also what you said is exactly true. So generational tendencies. So now you talk about unit trust and we're growing these things. Not you speaking way ahead of what most kids are doing. There's hardly any influencers are going open a unit trust. They're going buy this makeup. So
that's true.
Where did people live during COVID? Especially continental people. So my Portuguese friends, Italian friends, they moved in with their families. And Nona lives in the back room, and the eight of them were in the house. That's nothing new. How many? I mean, most of my Italian friends, the generations, three of them still live on the property.
I know it's 7 o'clock. We got to wrap this up, and we'll carry on in the next hour. But I do want to just finish off on this and ask you a question. Like, do you think all of that population explosion propaganda that we were exposed to as kids? Because Mash, you're a bit young to remember this, but do you remember everybody was saying that too many people, Earth is overpopulated? I wonder how much of a psychological influence that had on our generation having kids. How many people of your age, my age, maybe a little bit younger and a little bit older, decided not to have kids because they were constantly told in their childhoods that the earth is full?
So that could have been that's the best ever. That's one of the best propagandas ever then, because it fucked up an entire generation. Although totally, I have kids right all over the country. I have like 12 kids. I'm like Steve. Yeah,
but you don't pay for all of them because you haven't acknowledged most of them, right?
That's why I come on your show just to say hi to my kids.
There's Dad. We got to see Dad this year.
It's the time of the year.
Yeah, it's this day, today and Father's Day, the only 2 days you can get Dave on the show. All right, we'll be back in just a moment or two. CliffCentral.com. It is a Tuesday morning. It's the 24th of January already. We got lots to talk about, people to see, places to go, things to get into. We will do all of that and more in the next hour. Don't go away.